Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim. No, it's not. This is Terry Crosby. You know, I practiced that all last night.
Did you really?
And I didn't get it right. No, I'm just kidding. This is Terry Crosby.
Andy Steiger. I'm like, what on earth? You screwed up already, Terry.
I know, right?
This is Terry's first time hosting the podcast.
Yes, it is.
Steve Kim is in the frozen north of Edmonton, which is seriously frozen right now. They've had a snowstorm. It's his welcoming.
The day after, he sent me a picture. I don't know if he sent you that. There's snow on the ground, like probably an inch or something, and probably more to come, I'm sure.
April. And it's snowing.
But Steve is gone. I'm here. We are missing him a lot.
But he'll still be on the show. Don't worry.
He will be.
But he's not here today.
I just want to give one fact about Steve. Because he told us. So this is 176th episode, right?
I didn't know that.
And in those 175 episodes, he only missed two.
That's right. Yeah, he's actually pretty proud of that.
Yes. That's amazing.
That is amazing. I'll tell you a little Steve Kim fact as well. Steve Kim's Korean name is Chumbum.
And no. Yeah, really?
Chumbum. And his mom calls him Bum for short. I've just been calling him Bum.
Just naturally?
Just naturally.
Well, we have a guest here too today, and we'll introduce her in a sec, but we'll jump into my little dig that I do into the internet.
This is what Terry does for Apologetics Canada. He digs around in the internet to find bizarre but true things. What do you got for us?
In Japan, a Japanese spa lets you soak in ramen noodles.
You can pay to soak in ramen noodles. Can you eat them at the same time?
No. Their government said no to the organic noodles, so it's actually fabric noodles or something like that. But the most important thing is the broth that they sit in.
So it's legit broth.
Legit broth. They say that the collagen in the broth can soak into your skin and create goodness within your body.
I am all about creating goodness, but I am not convinced that's the way to do it.
Okay, so
next time you're in Japan, you can
It says
jump
it's making
some...
its way over to the North American population. Yeah, we are privileged to have Sam Graywall with us.
Good to have you here, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming and joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself currently? What are you doing? Where are you living?
I live in Abbotsford. I'm a current seminary student. I work at Power to Change.
It's a great organization that we appreciate a lot. For those of you that are American listening to the show or outside of Canada, Power to Change is a ministry that used to be called Campus Crusade for Christ, same thing, CRU in the United States. Do great work here. We've partnered with them on a number of occasions. And Sam, I got to know you a number of years ago. It's kind of crazy how long it's been. I can't even remember the exact time that we first met, but I remember when we first started talking that you had just come to faith in Christ. I mean, I think you had been maybe a Christian for a year or two.
So I moved to Abbotsford and had been in Abbotsford for a year, but I had been a Christian at that time for about 4 years.
Okay, 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the reasons why, we wanted you on the show is because you've got such an interesting story with how you came to know the Lord. And I want to get to that. But before we do, I first wanted to just talk about the religion that you grew up in, mm-hmm. which is Sikhism. And I want to just talk a little bit about that, what exactly Sikhism teaches. So tell us a little bit about that, how your family understood and practiced Sikhism. And then maybe we could talk about it more academically.
Okay, so growing up, my family was really into community service. And so that was one of the primary ways that they viewed faith, was doing good works in the community. And that's kind of what we were taught. we were taught to respect our elders, and we were taught to like do service in the community.
Growing up, did you go to the temple?
Yes, we went fairly regularly. And if you've ever been to a Sikh temple, for everyone from like small kids to adults, doing some sort of aspect of service, whether it's like maintaining the Gurdwara or the temple, or whether it's giving out food because they have food all around the clock. So in some way, shape or form, you're in the life of the temple and you're serving people.
Now, in Sikhism, they have something called the 5Ks. And I was wondering if you could just explain that for our listeners, but then as well, which of those Ks did your family practice?
Okay, so the 5Ks are the 5 articles of faith. So there are different items that you wear to identify yourself as a Sikh. And that was important historically because in those times, you had to distinguish yourself as a Sikh. A lot of the population in India was either Hindu or Islam or Muslim, and they wore these articles of faith to tell people who they were. So there is the bracelet, which is called the kara, which represents the internal nature of God. And then there's the turban, which is also one of them. There is a special type of underwear, undergarments that they wear when a Sikh is baptized. There is the sword, which represents self-defense. And yeah, that's most of them.
And there's a comb too, isn't
yes,
there?
Yes. So you would have that under the turban. It's not very visible, but it's definitely there.
So which of those did your family practice?
So they wore the steel bracelet, which is the kara. And normally that's the one that most Sikhs will wear, whether they're practicing or whether just cultural Sikhs, traditional Sikhs. Most of them will wear that one.
From what I understand, Sam, those that wear more of them tend to be baptized Sikhs. Is that the case?
Yes, that's correct.
And was anyone in your family a baptized Sikh?
My grandmother actually is. But nobody else in our family is.
Now, that's an interesting aspect of Sikhism. If you live in an area with Sikhs, most of the time it is the men who wear the turban. But when a female is a baptized Sikh, then you'll see that she'll wear the turban. Is that one of the main ways to distinguish that a lady is a baptized Sikh?
Yes, and you also see the kirpan, the small soldier.
Sword?
Sword, yes.
How influential was Sikhism in your family?
I would say it was very cultural. So everybody in our family, as far as we know, had always been a Sikh. And that's just the way of life. So you don't really go out and venture into other faiths or other religions.
You know, what does the Sikh religion teach about God and what is their holy book?
So about God, they believe that God is genderless, sort of like a force that created the world, but permeates the world as well. So he's of the world and also the creator of the world, that he is a force of good.
So would it be more like a pantheism?
There are some aspects of that, and there are some Sikh scholars who would say that there is pantheistic elements, and others that would say that it's hard to comprehend how to fit the Sikh version or the view of God into a box.
Now, one aspect, just not to belabor this, but I think it's interesting, is that in, you know, some religions such as Buddhism or Hinduism, this force is not a person. Whereas in Sikhism, they kind of seem to lean more towards the direction of personal force. Thoughts there, or would you disagree?
I think I would disagree. Because I think when I have shared my faith of going from Sikhism to Christianity, one of the aspects that a lot of Sikhs will push back on is the fact that God can't be personal. And so when they think about Jesus being a personal God, that doesn't really translate to them, that God is like impartial. And so when they think about Jesus dying for us, there's a connection there that it doesn't translate well with them.
Okay, that's helpful. And what's the holy scriptures for a Sikh?
So they're called the Guru Granth Sahib. So it's the holy book. It was written directly by the gurus, and a lot of it is poetry. So it's kind of follows the rhythm of the Psalms, and it's very much open to interpretation. So there isn't any clear like arguments presented in the Sikh scriptures, but it's a lot of like narratives, stories, or using Hinduism or Islamic metaphors and saying how those are not correct.
So when we talk with other world religions, and even atheists, we try to find a commonality in the two belief, our systems and theirs. What would you say are some connections between Sikhism and Christianity?
I would say like equality for all is one of the major ones. So they both view that we're all made in the image of God and that we all have intrinsic worth. So both would believe that. Both place a high value on community service or social action. And also Sikhs really value their holy book. They also call it the living word and you know, the word of God. So there's that parallel there.
What are some of the major differences that you've noticed? And on top of that, will they use wording like people are made in the image of God?
They would not use that same wording, but the meaning would be there.
Okay.
And then so some of the differences would be God does not have a son. The whole idea about Jesus is something that they reject very strongly. They would just view him as being a good moral teacher. So they do have prophets that they talk about in the scriptures, but they're more like what lessons can we learn from these people?
So are the gurus in Sikhism, would they be considered humans?
Yes. So they're all human. They just have extra knowledge and they're more enlightened. And so they have some sort of divine authority from God given to them to preach what the message of Sikhism is. But they themselves are not God.
Okay. Now, this might be a good place to transition into how you first began to hear about Christianity and what ultimately would bring you to Christianity. And maybe in that, you could also kind of tease out some of the distinctions between the two that really brought you to Christianity.
So growing up, like I said, I was raised in a Sikh family. So my parents, they did go to the temple, but they didn't really understand what their faith was really about. So they didn't know what the beliefs were, who God is from the point of view of Sikhism. So growing up, I was very a curious person, and I would ask them a lot of questions, and they would really not have a lot of answers. So as I grew older, I started reading.
Do you find that that's common in Sikhism, not to, you know, that theology, if you will, isn't not a lot of value placed on it?
I think it's a very cultural religion, and also it's a Eastern religion, so there's a lot of that sense of like honor and shame, and also like you don't question your elders. So if someone says, you know, this is what we believe, that's what you hold to, and you don't ask questions because that can be seen as a sign of a disrespect and rebellion even.
Okay. One of the things too that I've noticed in just the limited amount of study that I've done is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of Sikh literature out there. Have you noticed the same or?
Yeah, I've been trying to like write papers on Sikhism versus Christianity or just trying to tease out some of the elements of it. And there isn't really a lot to go on. So there are some Western scholars that have kind of studied it as a world religion. And there's maybe few Sikh scholars that have done the same. But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's a religion that's probably only 500 or 600 years old.
It's pretty young.
Yeah, it's like the youngest of the big five. So I think that also plays a huge factor. Yeah, so as I grew older, like I started reading the Sikh scriptures in English. And I was really trying to figure out who God is because, you know, we live in Canada. There's so many religions and all my friends were of different faiths. And
can I just press pause on that? What language were they originally written in?
They were written in Gurmukhi, which is like Punjabi, but it has different elements, a mixture of Punjabi and Sanskrit.
So if you speak Punjabi, you'd probably need to read the Sikh scriptures in English?
You can read them in Punjabi, but a lot of people don't have that literacy level in order to understand what it is because it's coming from different aspects, different languages as well.
Would it be the equivalent of reading Old English?
Yes.
Okay, so you're reading them in English?
Yes, and I was trying to figure out how is God represented in Sikhism and what is his personhood, what is his personality, what can I know about him? I was trying to figure out what is the difference between what I've been taught growing up and what are the other religions that are out there and seeing if there's commonality or difference. So I came across a scripture in the Sikh book about how God is unknowable and how if he wants to know you, then he can approach you. But you can't approach him. And so for me, that seemed like a little bit unfair because the whole time the scriptures were talking about how it's really important to like minimize your ego and do community works. And that's the way that you would reach God. But then how can you know God it didn't really speak about that. And God was not really personal in the scriptures. And that was kind of what I felt was truthful. And so I just had this sense of knowing that, like, if when I do encounter God or when I do encounter the truth, that I will know it. That, you know, I felt like a God had placed like a divine sense of knowing. And that because we're made in God's image, we'll connect with that somehow.
So so you would say then there was a real longing to know ultimate reality, to put it in that sense, and who you are and why you're here. Some of those big questions, is that what really got you into?
Yeah, I think I was trying to figure out why we're here and like thinking that we all go through the same motions in life and the same life stages and like, why do we do those things and like, why are we here? And there has to be greater purpose, greater reality for that gives us a sense of meaning. And
how old were you when you started to ask those questions?
I would say like 13. Probably that's the earliest age I can remember.
It's funny. I went through the exact same thing. I was about 13 as well when I started asking those questions. I remember distinctly going up to my weightlifting teacher in high school and I just said to him one day, I was like, you know, coach, it just seems sometimes like we're just going through the motions, you know, over and over again. And I'm lifting the weight up and down. And I looked at him, I go, sometimes I just wonder, you know, what's the point in all this? You know, what's the meaning to all this? And he just looked at me with this blank stare of, you're in the wrong class to be asking those questions. You know, and sometimes it feels that way, doesn't it? It's just, that's what life is. You get on the bench and you just push that weight up and down, get off and don't ask any of those bigger questions. Where I remember thinking, no, there's got to be more to all of this. And so where did you start to go to find the answers?
When I got to high school, I had a teacher, a biology teacher, and he used to be Catholic, but he became an atheist later on. So he was really pushing like evolution really hard and like naturalism really hard. So he would have these big, long tangents in class about how we have no meaning and saying that this is the origin of the universe, this is the Big Bang, and this is the supposed end of the universe, and this small little blip on this timeline represents you, and you'd have absolutely no impact on the course of evolution. So therefore, your life has no meaning.
Wow. Have a nice day, right?
Exactly.
I expect a 10-page report by tomorrow. Goodness. So where did that leave you?
I didn't agree with him because as I was studying science, I could see the intricacies of the human body and how it functions so well. And there's like multiple systems that work with each other. And how is it possible that that just happened randomly? You can produce the eye, but you can't tell the cells to see or how to produce sight.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea of like design versus function, right?
And so from your story, you then went on to university, and I believe it would be there in university when you would encounter a Christian that really changed your life?
So I was going to McMaster University, and I was majoring in biology. And I had a friend that I just met, and she was from one of the Christian clubs on campus. And we just started talking about spirituality and like different ways of thinking about God. And she had shared the gospel with me. And I had, you know, been born in Canada and I've lived here my whole life and I've had Christian friends, but none of them have really expressed what they mean. And so no one had at that point, like I was like 21 at that point, no one had shared what Jesus is all about. I've seen churches all the time. I've been in churches before too, and I'd never really understood. But this is the first time that I actually met a Christian who really understood their own theology and was able to express it.
So in all this transformation in your life going on, starting at 13, going to 21 now, how is that working with your family? Did you tell your family some of the things that you're struggling with? Did you not tell them at all? Did you, you know, there is probably some tension going on there.
Yeah, I did tell, like, I did kind of like put things out there a little bit. I did go through somewhat of a, like an agnostic phase. So there was times like where I would say things like, why do we go to the temple? I don't even believe in God, right? Things like that.
How would your parents respond to something like that?
They kind of like brushed it off because they viewed things like that as being like, you know, your teenage phase or just like, you know, you're trying to figure yourself out as a young adult and you don't really know anything yet because you're so young.
Now, In Sikhism, they hold to a theology of reincarnation, right?
Yes.
So then in some ways, if you were just to come out and say, oh, I'm an atheist, in some ways I'm guessing that they kind of would be like, they wouldn't really care too much, I guess, in some regards. Would they just think, well, I guess going to need another reincarnation to get it right? I mean, you know, how would they respond to something like that?
Well, with reincarnation, it's like that cycle of death and birth, right? So like if you're an atheist and you believe in reincarnation, like what you believe actually doesn't matter. Because it's all about like good works and like doing things to offset your karma.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, would your parents have been upset if you had come to them and said you were an atheist?
Probably not. They probably wouldn't have taken it seriously. And also Sikhism for them is really a cultural way of life. So because I'm Indian, you cannot not be a Sikh, basically.
Okay. So let's continue on in this. I think this is interesting what you had said there, by the way, and I think this is an important thing for listeners to think about. You encountered a Christian that could articulate the Christian worldview and how significant that is. But by the way, I had an interesting thing happen the other day with my son. He came home recently and explained to me how he had shared the gospel with one of his Sikh friends. And who was a girl, and how excited she was to hear what Christianity teaches, mm-hmm. and how she's also been thinking, and she said, in fact, her family doesn't really take Sikhism very seriously. And I hear that that's fairly common, and how they were, you know, she's been looking for truth, and how excited she was to hear, you know, Tristan explain to her the Christian worldview. And it sounds like that's exactly what happened for you. But I'm guessing you didn't just believe all of a sudden. You know, tell us about that. How did that come?
Yeah, so she explained the story of Jesus on the cross, but from the Father's perspective. So it was the idea of the Father loves his Son so much, but he also loves his creation and like people that he's made, that he's willing to send his Son to die for the sake of humanity. And so I think I really understood at that moment, like, that God actually loves us. And I think on some psychological level, I was looking for that. So that kind of spoke into like a sort of like a psychological need. And I had a lot of questions for her, because in our culture, we believe that like all roads lead to God. So whether you're Sikh, Muslim, Christian, your path is your faith. There is only one God. So we're all trying to reach the same God in our different ways. So I asked her about that question, like, what do you think of this? This is what I've been told growing up. And she told me that there's two roads, two options, that either you're on the narrow road, which is hard to find, but if you find it leads to eternal life, or you're on the broad road and that doesn't lead to anywhere good. So she had like some really good answers to a lot of my questions. But despite her good arguments, I still wasn't convinced. But she also had asked me if I wanted to invite Jesus into my heart. And that was like a very Christian phrase.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand.
I think there's some of us that are still trying to understand what that means.
So yeah. It was like a very foreign concept. And like, what does it mean to invite Jesus into your heart? That sounds kind of spooky in some senses. So I was like, no, I don't know what that means, but I'm going to say no. And her advice to me was, think about what I've said and just examine it, and also pray, because, you know, I believe in a God who reveals himself, and prayer is one of those ways. And so you can pray and God will show himself to you.
Now, that is significant, I'm sure, to you, because that's what you had thought at the beginning, or what you had wanted at the beginning, but Sikhism really wasn't offering. Was you know, how are you going to know this God? And so did you pray?
Yeah. So I went home and, you know, like, I thought about everything she had said, and I'm a very logical person. So I was like thinking, how do I determine what she's saying is true or not? What evidence do I really have? So I basically designed an experiment. So my experiment was to figure out what if God is real, and that to pray, because if I pray and nothing happens, then that means she lied or she didn't know what she was talking about. But if I pray and something does happen, then that means this is, you know, the way to truth. And that, you know, that's what I'm looking for. And so I should really put it to the test. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. I prayed. I just said, I just asked God to, that if you're real, just show me somehow. very quick, short prayer. Didn't think much of it. Kind of just felt like it was something that I needed to do in the moment. And then I went to sleep and I had a dream. And in this dream, I felt there was like somebody walking towards me who covered me in a white cloth. And I looked around and I felt like I could sense goodness and darkness, basically. And I felt like there was like a lot of darkness around me. And I was trying to fight this on my own strength. And I said the name of Jesus in the dream. And I never really, like, I didn't watch a movie where that happened, or didn't know that that's something you can do. Like, that didn't know there's power in the name of Jesus, right? Once I did that, the darkness left. And then in the dream, I saw Jesus standing at my door in my room. I went up to him, and, you know, he was smiling the whole time, which was confusing to me because, like, I didn't have a personal relationship with him at that point. And so I didn't know why he would be happy to see someone he doesn't really know from my perspective, right? And so he didn't really say anything, but he put his hand over my head. And in our culture, that's a sign of blessing someone or giving your inheritance to someone. So that's something that's throughout my life has been really meaningful to me and something that I look back on that God understands and knows my culture.
That's awesome. So I get, you know, you wake up from something like that. What are you thinking? Because it's one thing to have a dream, right? But I'm sure you at the same time, you probably, I guess, wanted to intrigued you to know this Christianity more, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So when I woke up from that dream, I was kind of scared a little bit because you don't pray and expect something to happen. And that was the first time in my life where, like, I actually saw the evidence of prayer having an impact. And so I woke up from that and I was like thinking, how do I make sense of this? I'm an Indian person and I have never met anybody else from my culture who is a Christian. So there wasn't really, I guess, a lot of people that could really communicate from my perspective. Yeah. So it made me kind of really try to discern whether Jesus is actually true and like whether the Bible is actually true. I started going into a lot of like apologetics resources and try to figure out if Jesus was a historical person and what did he say about himself? Can we trust the Bible? So all these different kind of questions. So I had more questions. I didn't have less questions. So I started like going into more understanding, what is the Christian faith about? How does it compare to other faiths? Is it a more coherent religion? What's the biblical worldview? So all those kind of questions were things that I started to explore.
What were some significant answers that you found or evidence that you came across that you thought was quite persuasive?
When I started reading about the resurrection and also like how Paul says, if you want to disprove Christianity, all you gotta do is disprove the resurrection. So for me, when I kind of got hold of that from a like scientific method point of view, I thought, okay, well, if I want to really know if Christianity is true, then I need to either prove or disapprove the resurrection. I need to see what the evidence are and examine those and then draw logical conclusions. So that's kind of what I did. So I read articles and papers and books on the resurrection. And I think the most important one for me was the idea that so many people saw Jesus after the resurrection event. Mm-hmm. And how can so many people have the same experience? Like, so something around like 500 witnesses have of the resurrection, right? So either they're all lying, like they all colluded and they're all lying, or they all had a mass hallucination, or they all are telling the truth. So those are the three possible options. And like the idea of mass hallucination doesn't really make sense. Multiple people can hallucinate, but they can't all hallucinate the same thing and encounter the same, you know, vision or the same aspects of what Jesus taught. So I think for me, the resurrection was the most compelling evidence.
So did all this study and inquiry bring you to a place of profession of faith, like at a certain time after, you know, finishing this kind of study?
After I went through all that, I decided that like Christianity was going to be my path. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to believe.
Okay.
I think it's fascinating just to highlight that God was engaging with you, Sam, at both a heart and head level. There were people involved, there were dreams involved, and there was evidence that was involved. And I think it's just so important to highlight because some people tend to have this idea that people come to faith and it's either all about, you know, a heart experience, or it's all about a head experience, or, you know what I mean? And I often find, well, it's often a mix of them. Sometimes it can be hard to tease those out, but man, in your experience, Sam, it was, you really clearly see this progression of both your heart and your head that ultimately led you to coming to Christ. But I'm guessing that then there's another aspect to it that I find a lot of Westerners don't appreciate, that people from other religions or cults understand, and that's the commitment level, where now I'm going to need to make a decision. Am I going to follow this in knowing that this is going to cost me something? And I'm sure you must have been thinking, this is going to cost me a lot, and particularly it's going to have a strain on your family. You know, tell us about that and what that was like, telling your family and really counting the cost to follow Jesus.
I think even like while I was studying all the different evidences, I was kind of hoping that it wouldn't be true, because I knew that like if the evidence stacked up and it was true, like there would be a huge cost. And that was kind of really always in the back of my mind. That reality was always there.
Let's just talk about that for a moment. For somebody that's a Sikh, what is the cost?
Well, coming out to your family, especially if you're a woman, there are some really strong consequences. Your family will think like, how will we be accepted in the community? Because being a Sikh is, and it's not only a religion, it's a way of life. And there's a sense of pride that comes with it, and like almost status in the community, in a place in the community. So if you're not a Sikh, but you're from the Punjabi background, it's really hard for people to accept you.
Do you think that your parents would have rather you came out as an atheist or a Christian?
Probably atheist, because it's like there's not really any lot of telltale signs of being an atheist. There's no church body. There's no things that you cannot do, right? There's no commitment level. Whereas there's this really strong commitment level when you're a Christian, like you go to church, you read the Bible. There are certain things that you have to uphold. So I think that was a really strong aspect of that.
And how did your family react when you told them?
So I told them like about 4 months after I kind of made the personal decision, because I wanted to be prepared. I personally thought they would ask a lot of questions. Why do you believe this versus Sikhism? Are you sure about this? And like, what's the evidence? Those kind of things. Because those are the kind of questions I would probably ask somebody. But for them, it was very much cultural and very much emotional. And so they kind of reacted with a lot of negative emotions. My dad was saying like, no daughter of mine can be a Christian. Because for him, like this was...
It was shame related.
Yeah. It was literally the worst thing that I could probably have ever done, was become a Christian. Hmm. And my sisters didn't understand, which was shocking to me, because like we all, you know, we all grew up in Canada, and I thought they would be a little bit more understanding. We live in a democratic society, and like people can choose what they want to believe in. So they were really confused, because despite growing up in Canada, they really also still valued their culture. And so whether they believed in Sikhism per se or not, being a Sikh was what they knew.
I'm really intrigued by your dream and the fact that Jesus recognized your culture, as you said. How is that in play right now with your life as a Christian and the culture that you came from? Do you still, do you enjoy those get-togethers, those community events, you know? Because Sikhism is very community-related, right? And the relationships are huge. So when you get together, I'm sure it's a hoot.
Yeah, so I still very much participate in like the customs and traditions of Punjabi culture and some Sikh culture. So I still celebrate Diwali, right, and the different things like that.
Which is an important thing for people to understand. I find this often when I teach on world religions, that people tend to conflate cultural practices with the religion, and needing to understand that often they're intertwined, but they are distinct. And it can be easy for you to assume that a cultural practice is a religious practice when in fact it's not.
Yeah, so like I think one of the biggest struggles I had as a Christian in like trying to integrate myself into church communities was the fact that there was a lot of misconceptions about Christianity itself. what kind of religion is this? Is it a white man's religion, right? Like, those are questions I asked of myself, and those are questions I've asked of the church as well. Like, what kind of religion is this? And so I think
which is an amusing question, by the way, isn't it?
Yes.
Because the religion, Jesus being Jewish, you know, from the Middle East, yet it isn't that fascinating that we'll often ask the question, you know, is this a white man's religion? Now, I sometimes wonder, you know, if a Muslim encounters a Christian in a different culture, will they have different questions? You know, will they think, oh, Christianity is a Middle Eastern religion, or, you know what I'm saying? If they're in Southeast Asia or something mm-hmm. like that. I've often wondered that, you know, but here in the West, that's oftentimes the case.
Yeah, so I think I had to really figure that out. That's always kind of been a really important question for me, because the Sikh community views Christianity as a white religion. So they have misconceptions of like what we believe, who we worship, and what does Jesus look like actually matters to them.
What are some misconceptions that you've come across in the Sikh community about Christianity?
So they kind of will understand Christianity as a Western religion. So anything that Western people are known for doing, they will say that's Christianity.
Oh, so they do the exact same thing I just talked about, where they'll misunderstand cultural practices for Christianity.
Yes. And I think we all do that, right?
Yeah. That seems to be a human thing. Sam, one of the things I remember, you know, when I first met you is throughout the years, just praying with you and talking about just the challenges that you faced going from Sikhism to Christianity, and just the challenges that you faced with family and friends. And we've talked through that over the years, and it's been cool just to see how God has been at work in your life. But I'd love for you just to give some advice to those, one, advice to Christians that want to share their faith with Sikhs, and then also for those people maybe that are listening that are thinking about Christianity, you know, and who knows what kind of cultural or religious background they're coming from, but what kind of advice would you give to them?
So for Christians who want to engage Sikhs are very community-oriented, and they love to celebrate things. So one of the best ways of getting to know them is by inviting them to, you know, Christmas, Easter, or just like anything casual, you know, in your own home. It actually means a lot more when you invite somebody to your home than you do like meet them out in a public place. So that's really important. And like not to have a time limit on things, because I think in our Western mindset, we kind of are really punctual and we have like time frames for how long something should last. And whereas Sikhs don't have that, they tend to view that, you know, you're getting together with somebody and just enjoy time as it passes, and like not to put demands on time. And like if you say like, oh, okay, we've been here for an hour, you know, we should go home, they may view that like you didn't enjoy their company. So there's certain like cultural aspects that are really important to understand.
And for those people that are thinking about becoming a Christian and they're counting the cost, what kind of advice would you give to them?
If you're counting the cost, I would say that there's nothing else in terms of like faith and life that really would give you the purpose and meaning that you're looking for. And also that like there's so much evidence that like, that stacks itself up showing that Jesus is who he says he is. And so either your choice is whether, you know, you want to live a lie or you want to live in a way that matters.
And so then you would say that not only did you find truth, but that truth changed your life.
Yes, for sure. And I think that's what truth does. It's belief, but it's also like something that transforms you from the inside out and changes the way you live your life and how you view others.
You know, it's interesting. That's exactly what I experienced as I got older and went from my trying to ask the big questions of life meaning with my weightlifting coach to, you know, seeking out those answers and finding them in Jesus. And over these years, having the joy of looking back at how God has changed my life and continues to impact me in wonderful ways, having found meaning and purpose, that as I have studied world religions and philosophies, I have found nothing else, nothing that compares to what Christianity has. And you're right, Sam. It has something so amazing because it's true.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sam. I was just wondering, would it be okay if you invited some Sikhs over to teach you how to cook their meals? Would that be okay?
Yes. we love to cook.
Yes.
So you can try with butter chicken. That probably would be
butter chicken is my fave. How about you, Andy?
So basically what you're saying, Terry, is you want to invite some people over, some Sikhs over, just so they can feed you.
Well, I just know within the Cree native culture, relationships and food and all that is so important, and the relationship of coming around stuff like that is very important.
Well, that kind of evangelism sounds great to me.
I love that kind of evangelism.
Come on over, make me some butter chicken, which I love, by the way. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you all about Jesus.
Yeah. Thanks again, Sam, for coming. And we appreciate your story. And it's been just great to hear. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada. And we'll be back next week with more things to think about.